Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is Monday, July 15th, the year 2000. And Joe Arnett is presenting Plant Life of the North Cascades, Symbiosis and Change, Session 1, Conifers of Washington. And why don't we go listen now?
All of our sessions are recorded with Holden, so anything you want to say that isn't that you don't want on the record, now's not the time. So some of you I know and some of you are new, but my name is Joe Arnett, and I'm serving the village this week as botanist. And so my job is to help people learn about the plant life in the valley. And the theme of Holden this year is 4 years in the wilderness. And wilderness, of course, means a lot of different things to different people. Sometimes it referred to kind of a hostile place where people went maybe against their will, or maybe for certain experiences. And to us, it's a place we go for a certain kind of renewal. But I also think of wilderness as nature that has not had the influence of human activity. So part of our study of the wilderness is the study of nature, to see what is life like. What is this natural world around us like? And so my role, my part in that process is to look at plants. And I thought what I'd do first is show you a classification of plants, sort of as an outline of the course for the week, because through the week we'll look at different groups, and then as the week progresses we'll look at ecology and how different organisms interact with each other. This is sort of a classification. I don't know if you studied biology when you were in school, and if that was a happy experience for you.
So long ago.
I remember I had a lamp, a microscope lamp that I got as a surplus from my department. I got it to use, and somebody had scratched on the lampshade, "I hate biology." So I thought that was really unfortunate, because biology is just the study of life, so what could be more interesting than that? But somehow, as a study, it can be made very deadly. So we'll hope to avoid that. But I do have phyla listed here, and not to scare you off, but I just wanted at this stage to point out that there's really, within these things we consider to be plants, which don't include a lot of things that were considered to be plants when I first studied biology, like fungi, who is considered them to be plants. They don't move around much, so that's sort of plant-like. The protista includes algae and a lot of other things, and some of them do move around, so they're not very plant-like. But some of the ones that move around, like Paramecium or Euglena, are also photosynthetic. So they're plants, plant-like, because they can carry out photosynthesis, but they're animal-like as they swim around. So biologists have created this kingdom of protista, which includes a lot of diversity. I don't doubt that as time goes on, this will be divided into separate kingdoms, because there's a lot of very diverse things here. But our topic really is just the plants, which include conifers, which we're going to look at today, and flowering plants, which we'll look at in a couple days. The simplest way to break down all of the plants is to think of vascular plants and cryptic or bryophytes, which are not vascular. Just to tell you that my particular area of expertise is vascular plants, which are just bigger, in a simple way, just bigger plants, plants that have specialized tissue for transport of water and nutrients. So it doesn't include these plants, which are very small and transport material cell to cell. So this is what we're going to look at primarily. So of course, topic today is conifers. And if you come to the Northwest from somewhere else, and how many people are from somewhere else? Okay. And how many people are from Washington before I can stay here? Oh, good. We're about half and half split. Well, I came to Washington about 22 years ago or something like that, and I thought I knew the plants where I came from fairly well. You know, not as a professional, but I knew the trees, and I came from New England. And I quickly discovered that they had all these conifers, and I didn't know what any of them were. They all looked about the same. And so some of you may be having that same experience. But as you start looking at them, you find that there's various quite pronounced differences between them. And it really isn't hard to tell them apart if you know the little details to look at. And I did bring a pile of hand lenses, and I see they're all gone. So they're scattered through here. Is there one more left there?
No.
Hand lenses. Oh, we'll have to share those. There aren't enough for everybody, but if we have one or two or three people, we can pass them around. I happen to lose my glasses this week, and so I can't see things close up really well. I can see far away fine. So I'm finding that you really do and need to be able to see small features to identify contours. And looking around the table here in the self-test, I realize that there's a couple that I have a hard time distinguishing without my glasses, which I never really realized because I thought I knew them quite well. So be forewarned that you need to see small features, and this is the primary tool for that. And also over there is a list of all the contours in the Holden area, which includes the high country, the tree line area. And there are 16 contours in this area that I've seen. So there's quite a few. In approaching learning about anything, especially learning about biology or learning about plants, it really is an infinite topic. And we have infinite capacity. So, we have finite capacity. So we're not going to learn everything. And if this is brand new to you, you probably won't learn all 16 of these, in one session. But if you can learn two or three, that's the beginning of that process. And that's how I kind of approach it. I try to learn a little bit at a time. And to sort of abbreviate the 16, I made a list on the board, which I think are all of those that are found right here in Holden Village. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think that's right. Now, I might have missed one or two. I didn't include Western Hemlock, which I've only seen one tree of that species in the valley, and it's up the valley about a mile, so I left that off too. But if you walk right around here out behind the Koinonia, you'd see all of these species, with one possible exception. Granifer, I have some here, but I didn't haven't seen it right around the village. It grows just down valley a little bit. So the best way, I think, to learn to identify them is to just jump right in and use a dichotomous key, which is a tool for identification. And so I brought several copies of a key, which is over there. And it's a key out of this book, which is by Stephen Arnold. If you live in the Northwest and you're interested in trees, really recommend this book. It's called Northwest Trees. And it's illustrated by Ramona Hammerly. It has really great drawings in it. And it's got a key in the beginning, which is to identification, which is what we're going to use today. And then it also has a whole lot about the ecology of each of the species and also how they're used. And it's got great illustrations, both just general, kind of appearance illustrations. And then it's got a few little technical drawings associated with the key, which you'll have in front of you today, so you can see some of the features. So I really recommend this book for trees. And while I'm on the topic, if you want to learn about the plants of the Northwest, this is another book I recommend for beginners. And I say beginners, but it's used by professional botanists too, because it's a current book. We've had some name changes, so it's got some modern names. It doesn't include everything. It's not comprehensive, but it includes most of what you encounter. Trees, as well as conifers, as well as flowering plants. It also includes a little bit about the bryophytes, or those mosses, which are the little plants, about which I know very little. So I really recommend it. If you're really serious, and I don't know, yes?
When it says Pacific Northwest Coast, does that mean like all of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, or west of the mountains?
It's mostly west of the mountains.
Okay.
It basically includes British Columbia, Washington, Oregon,
okay,
west of the mountains. Now there's a counterpart which looks very similar, has a little different photograph on the cover, but it's for the interior portions of that same area.
Okay.
I think it's called Interior British Columbia, something like that. It's the same publisher. The authors aren't the same, but both this book and the counterpart were published and written by a group of people. They're not single author books. Both of these are in the bookstore here on St. Olden. And this is too. It has a different cover. The current edition of this has a different painting on the cover. Or it might be a photograph. If you're really serious, and I don't know if any of you want to pursue it this far, because it's not something you pursue as in a casual way, but this is the technical flora of our region. And it has a reputation of being one of the best floras, and a flora is the technical reference of an area. One of the best floras that's ever written. And the little work I've done in other parts of the country, I've really come to appreciate this book. It's highly illustrated, and it is comprehensive. Two things about it that are difficult. The most important one is that it's a condensation of 5 volumes, and so everything in it is very small and it's abbreviated. So it takes a while when you first start to use it to learn. It's like reading a foreign language.
That was my, I'm trying to remember, it was 74, 75, that was my textbook for a class.
Oh, is that right?
And I thought the class was about plant taxonomy, but when I got done, it was actually about trying to read that book. Because there's a different, the 5-volume work he's talking about is 5 volumes, each book is like this.
Yeah.
And that thick. So they abbreviate every single word. In fact, there's no word that's as long as any of the words here. The word about is abbreviated as CA.
Yeah.
And there's,
right, plant, PL.
Oh, yeah, there's no, yeah. Kind of.
So it does take, and I carried it for years, kind of cringing every time I had to use it until I finally learned the language. But it is a great book, so just so you know that. So you have at least one veteran here, that's great.
Well, it's like a foreign language that I learned 20 years ago.
Yeah, you haven't been there.
I haven't spoke Spanish since.
Yeah, that's a challenge. So, but what we'd like to do now is take this key, which is, I'll turn over here just for a second to show. In fact, I'll read along with you, because I'll read out of the book. This is the key, and it's just a portion of the key out of the book, and it's just the portion that covers conifers. So what I'd like to do is give you a conifer, some specimens of conifers to look at, and let's start with this one. You can maybe take a piece and pass it around. I'm going to take one. I'll pass a couple behind you. Now, a dichotomous key is a tool that people use for identification. And this one that we're going to use today is a simple one. So I think it's good to start with one that isn't going to be too intimidating and that's going to lead you to success. You know, this is on the philosophy of, instead of giving you a fish, I'll try to teach you how to fish.
You know, so some of these look rather different. Are they all the same thing?
No, they're not. Actually, that one is a contaminant.
Okay. Okay, you're trying to scare me here.
You're confused.
You know, still about
first test, to be passed.
Right, so you saw the difference. Yes.
I passed!
Anybody not have a piece to look at? We got some extras? Okay. We'll put this back on the table. If you can imagine taking a piece off of all these conifers, if we had time, this is maybe what we'll do. Putting them in a big pile, and see, we'll sort them by type. Well, right away, you'd start to see some really obvious differences, whether the leaves are in bundles or whether they're single, whether the leaves are pointed or blunt, whether the leaves have wooden stalks or green stalks. So, let's just jump right into this key. The way a dichotomous key works is you have a series of questions, which are called couplets, and you make a choice. And based on that choice, you go one way or the other. Sometimes the choice is really obvious, and you can proceed with confidence. Sometimes you really just don't know the answer to the question. And in real terms, you just proceed anyway, but you make your best guess. The important thing is to remember where you guessed, because if you find yourself in territory that makes no sense, you've gone the wrong way. It's kind of a metaphor for life, you know. So you back up to that fork in the road and take the other fork. Because one of those two forks is right. And if you've taken the right one, usually it starts asking you questions that make sense. So let's just go right to this page 3. Which is the cover page on what you have. and go to question number one, and it asks you a question, and it says, 1A, leaves needle-like or scale-like, that's the conifers, or 1B, leaves not needle-like or scale-like. It's pretty easy, I guess. So what do you think? What choice would you make?
Needle-like.
1A, okay. Now right here, there's two things to know. Every question has an A and a B, so you choose your best. The other is, when you make your choice, it's going to direct you somewhere. Now, this one happens to direct you to step two, which is pretty easy, but it might say, see step 23. So you have to pay attention and then go to step 23 if you make that choice. The most common error people make in keys, or that I make, is losing track of where I am.
Do we all have the same thing?
I assume that you all have the same thing. If your choice looks different than what everybody else makes, you might have a contaminant, so let me know.
Yeah.
So we've chosen 1A takes us to step 2. Okay, step 2 is going to ask us a question. It says 2A leaves needle-like more than a half inch long, or leaves scaly tiny pressed against twigs.
Bang.
2A. Okay, everybody see that? Mm-hmm. Now the next one we're going to do is going to be the other choice. This is a scaly. This is what scale-like leaves look like. Mm-hmm. Your contaminant you had over there. So in a minute we'll go back and do that. So this one, because it has needle-like leaves, it says see step 3. So then you go down to 3, and there's another choice. Needles evergreen, relatively hard or tough. Or needles deciduous, dropping from the tree each fall, soft and born mostly in small, dense clusters. Now, do you know if this is deciduous or not? You really don't have any way of knowing. But if you read the whole description, it gives you other information.
About clusters.
About clusters, yeah. And just so you know, this is what it's referring to, which is a deciduous conifer. And when it says delicate, well, it doesn't ask, well, 3A says relatively hard or tough.
Yeah.
Well, just to know, this is not relatively hard or tough.
I never knew there was a deciduous conifer.
I didn't either.
Yeah. I thought they were opposites.
No, there are deciduous conifers. The term deciduous just means that it loses the leaves every year. And this is a deciduous conifer called subalpine larch. But it's the toughest tree in Washington as far as where it grows. It grows in the most hostile environment, right at the high elevation tree line. And it's got the most delicate leaves of them all.
Wow.
If you look at these, I picked these yesterday and the day before, and it's totally wilted already. It's been in the refrigerator. But you can see that there are very delicate leaves and they're born in clusters of around 20 or so. So it looked quite different, just to give you that point of reference. But that isn't what we have now. And so these leaves are evergreen, relatively hard, tough. See step
5.
So go to 5. And if we lose you, speak up, because we'd like to keep.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes, please.
So according to the key, then that means that the larch is the only deciduous conifer.
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just checking.
Yeah, and we have two species of larch in Washington.
Okay.
But that's the only genus that's deciduous. Just as an aside here, there's stories in urban areas where people buy a house and has a larch in the yard, and fall comes and the leaves fall off, and they think the tree's dead, and they cut it down or something.
Oh.
And also, a bald cypress from the southeast part of the country is planted in, for example, in Seattle there, there's lots of bald cypress planted around. It's also deciduous, so it also loses its needles.
Yeah.
What about tamarack? Is tamarack a
tamarack is the same thing.
Oh, is it the same name?
Yeah.
And different names?
Different common names. The genus Larix, and most people in the West call it larch, and in the Midwest they call it tamarack.
Okay.
And in Maine they call it hackmatack. At least some people do in Maine. So those are different names for the same thing.
Hmm.
I actually think tamarack is a really nice name. It's not often called
it.
except people from Minnesota.
Yeah, that's right.
So, But that's not what we have here. That takes us to step five. So this asks a very fundamental question. Needles attached in bundles of 2, 3, or 5, or needles attached singly? Okay. And attached in bundles looks like this. And we have... We have about 4 different species of pines which have their needles attached in bundles. So here's one that's got 3 to a bundle, and we'll get to that. But that's not what we're looking at right here. Attached singly to the twigs, see step 10. So this is one of those places where you have to see where is step 10. It might be a couple pages later. So 10A, twigs of the current year remain green, needles flat and tipped with a slender point. Now, you don't have fruit, but it's going to ask you fruit red, small red, and berry-like. Bark, you don't have bark either. Purplish and shredding, in papery scales, often a low-spreading tree. Well, this was a low-spreading tree.
It's got a picture, too.
Yeah, and the picture really tells you a lot, because what it shows you, if you look at the tip of this leaf with a hand lens, I can't see it with my naked eye, but you'll see that it comes up like this to a very fine, soft tip like that. In a cross-section, the leaf is flat and sort of like this. And it has a little rib there, which you may or may not see, depending on where you break the leaf. Has anybody never used a hand knife?
Very cool.
Okay, let me give you a demonstration. Who's never used one?
You've never used one.
Great. I'll use you for a guinea pig. The way you use a hand lens is you put it as close to your eye as you can, like touching your eyelash. Or if you have glasses, you can put it right against the lens of your glasses. And then you put your head up so that the light is going to hit the object you're looking at. The more light, the better. And then you bring the object closer and closer to the lens until it seems like it's going to poke you in the eye.
Wow.
Usually you can tell when it's in focus by the sound. I don't know if it'll work this time. Sometimes it does.
Now I see it. Cool.
Usually there's this,
experience.
So try that. Do the folks in back not have a hand lens? Could we take one of yours and pass it around? There aren't enough for everybody, but there should be enough so that 2 or 3.
Really?
And you folks don't have any of it either. Why don't you take this one? Yeah, you can use this one. Hand lens, it's just like if you need reading glasses and you don't have them. Well, hand lens opens up whole worlds, whole new little miniature world. So if you look at the tip and you see this very fine soft point, that by itself is enough to tell you the species. In Washington, it's the only species of yew, and it's got that diagnostic trait, specific yew. So you should, after taking this course and being an advanced plant identifier, just with a little tip of a leaf, that's all you need, you can tell that species. Now it does have, which aren't really appropriately called fruits, even though the key calls it a fruit, but it does have what looks like a berry, and I have to say looks like, because a berry is a flowering plant fruit. And this isn't a flowering plant, it has cones. But the way the female cone grows is it looks kind of like this. It is bright red. And the berry, if I did a cross-section, like all the way through, it looks kind of like this. I took that and sliced it in half. And here's the seed. And that's unique among the conifers. And I don't know if that thing, you have to say berry in parentheses, in quotation mark, because it's not really a berry. I don't know if that has some function in dispersal, like most berries do, but that is the way the fruit is of that yew. It also has separate male and female plants. So you'll find some yew plants have these berry-like things on them, and some don't.
Like hollies.
Pardon?
Like holly.
Like holly, yes. It's called dioecious. It's a separate male and female. It's the only conifer that is that way.
Huh.
And dioecious just means two houses. And there are many flowering plants that are that way, but this is the only conifer. So, we've successfully identified that as a species.
Do all conifers reproduce sexually?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, almost all plants do. There are very few exceptions, and they're usually weeds that have hit sort of an evolutionary dead end, and they no longer reproduce sexually, so they no longer produce new individuals.
Right.
They're just running on the basis of the existing individuals.
And the first one, that's the female who has the berry.
That's right. That's right. And the male, I don't know exactly what it looks like because it's nearly microscopic, but the male will have a cone which has little, it's called a strobilus, but in here is where the pollen would be produced. In fact, all of the conifers have very similar male cones, which produce pollen which is transported by the wind.
Where would that be located, that male cone?
Somewhere out near the tips of the branches. I don't know if they're right on the tip or if they're in the leaf axils.
Well, I have new growth here, and there's something right at the where the new growth is coming out.
Yeah, you may have male cones. Let me have a look to see.
So right in there.
That's the axil.
Can we borrow that?
Yes.
If I can see it. See, this tree didn't have anything on it that I could see, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it could be. What I see looks more like just the scales where it's broken. Oh, I see, right down there. Yeah, it probably is, but I don't know for sure. And it could be the female that hasn't yet
produced berry.
Yeah, developed into that.
Right where the new growth, the soft, the lighter green growth goes
to. Yeah,
it could well be. Another question.
Is this the same kind of yew that they get the cancer drug from?
It is. And there was a, for a while, people were collecting bark from this for making Taxol, which is cancer treatment drug. Apparently now they can, either they take bark from English yew and are able to convert it into the form that they make Taxol from, or there's another, a similar drug that's been developed from other sources. So it had quite an impact on, yew is not a very common tree, it's not rare, but it's not a very common tree or a very big tree, so it's having an impact when people are collecting bark off of it. So I actually never saw any of those impacts, but on National Forest land, I've heard that. Okay, that's number one. So let's put those in a pile somewhere.
All
right, if you can pass it over here, eventually that'd be okay. And let's do this one. Maybe grab, pick some, and pass some on. This one doesn't have a lot of pitch, so it's not going to use to grab a piece of it. It's not going to get your hands all sticky.
Where do you want us to put the ones we just
grabbed?
Okay.
You could maybe take some of that. I'll take some. You don't need. Pass some of that. Isn't this more interesting than just looking at books?
Yeah, yeah. This is great.
Looking at real things?
Is this your
yew pile?
Yes.
He is a yew pile.
I have a friend who did his dissertation on this specific yew. He studied it and for his PhD, and he had a whole section in his dissertation on humor.
Humor.
So. So probably if it suggests any jokes to you, they've been used. There it is again. Okay, let's try again. Now this first few questions will be very familiar to you because you've already been through it. Question number one. Leaves needle-like or scale-like?
Yes.
Or leaves not needle-like or scale-like? Now this is a scale-like leaf. So that takes us to step two. Step two, leaves needle-like more than a half inch long? Or leaves scaly, tiny, pressed against the twig. Everybody agree with 2B?
Yeah.
It takes us to step 19. See, here you have to pay attention, follow directions, Working a key is sort of the opposite of a holistic view of nature. It's like an analytical process where you put on your blinders and pay attention to the very specific question. It's not a lot of fun. It's not as much fun for me as looking at the whole thing. That's the way keys work.
The difference between global and analytic personalities.
That's right. So, 19A. Branches rather bushy, not flattened and spray-like. Bears lumpy, bluish, berry-like fruits about the size of a pea. Small, often shrubby trees on dry sites near northern Puget Sound or east of the Cascades. Or 19B, branches flattened and spray-like. Bearing small woody cones, we don't have the cones. Potentially large forest trees on moist sites. Well, this was growing on a fairly moist site, and it wasn't a very big forest tree, but you don't even need to know that. You just know that the sprays are flattened. So that takes you to step 21. Step 21, cones. Now this one, we don't have cones, but let's read the whole description. It says cones about an inch long, appearing to be made up of three large scales, the larger scale-like leaves extending a quarter to a half inch along the surface of the twigs, at least the upper branches upturned and the tree tip erect. Of course, we don't have anything to look at to answer that, so we're totally adrift. But then it says, growing northward in the Cascades only to Mount Hood. Well, Mount Hood is in northern Oregon, so we're way out of range.
Yeah.
Incense cedar. Now, in the mountains or in undisturbed environments, you can use geography as a good indicator. But if you're in an urban area where people have been planting, you can't trust geography. It could be from anywhere in the world. I'll tell you a story. I was teaching a class in plant identification, and I wanted to collect some abies, some true fir, this genus here, for the class. And so I went out in my backyard. I live at sea level, Puget Sound area. There's only one abies at sea level, and that's grand fir. And I have these trees in my backyard, and they look like grand fir to me, and I picked some pieces and took them to class. The class kept trying to work it through the key, and they kept saying, well, it's looking like sort of like silver fir, you know, the way the leaves are arranged. And I'd explain, oh, well, those are growing in the shade, and sometimes the leaves are atypical. And then they say, you know, these leaves seem kind of long, like sort of or not quite long enough, like, you know, like they're sort of shorter like silver fir. And I say, well, you know, you can't really trust the leaves because, you know. Of course, then I got home and I looked at the trees, and of course there's silver fir growing in my backyard. And that's because they're probably somebody's Christmas tree and they planted it. So geography will work up here outside the village. But even in the village, I wouldn't be sure that nobody's brought in a Norway spruce or a, you know, people bring in garden plants, and I'm not against that, but something to be aware of. So having said that, we're back at question 21, and it did say that we're out of range of 21A.
Yes.
So 21B, we don't have the cones. Cones a quarter to a half inch long, made of several scales. Leaves generally extending less than a quarter inch along the twigs. Not sure exactly what that means, that the leaves are shorter than a quarter inch, so they couldn't extend more. Upper branches and tip at least somewhat drooping, trees widespread in the Pacific Northwest. Well, here's a sort of ambiguous question. We're basing it on geography, which is weak territory, but that would be the choice we'd make. And if we found that the final description didn't fit what we had, this is where we'd go back and try the other one. So, see step 22. Again, you don't have the cones, but it says cones round, foliage droops strongly, weeping. Bark ashy gray and flaking. You don't have the bark. Leaves distinctly malodorous when crushed. We'll crush these up and see if you would call them distinctly malodorous. I don't have a very good sense of smell.
I don't think that's malodorous. I like that smell.
Even to me, it smells pretty good. Yeah. Okay. So it's not malodorous. So that's a bit of evidence we have. It also says found at higher elevation. Well, what's high? It's a relative term. So it's not going to help you too much. Because we're in mid-elevation in the mountains. We have both high elevation species and low elevation. So it's not helping us much. But the sense of smell does. And if we go to 22B, it says cones elongated, foliage only somewhat drooping. See, very relative term, it doesn't help a lot. Bark brownish and shredding in long fibrous strips. Now, I will say that if you go out in the woods here and look at this tree, the bark is distinctly shredding in red strips. And the other choice, this Alaska cedar, the bark is gray and much more like in platy strips. You can see both of them, but the reddish color of the bark is distinctive. And then it says leaves not malodorous, tree abundant at lower elevation. So it actually goes up, you know, to 4,000 feet or so in the mountains, so it does go up a ways into the mountains. So this is what we have, 22B Western Red Cedar. Thuya. Well, that's how it's most often said. You know, scientific names are spoken language, and you'll find if you get any group of botanists together that they all say things differently. And sometimes a source of great humor, and sometimes people get irritated if they're of the self-righteous type.
That's my thesis project.
That's your thesis project?
I said, no, that's
the way they Right, right. So I'm a believer that however you say it is fine, that it's a spoken language.
Can I test my long-term memories of Thuya plicata?
That's right, Thuya plicata. That's what it is, Western Red Cedar. Another thing about cedar, the old world had most of our conifers. It had firs and pines and spruces and trees they called cedars. And so when people came to the New World, they found representatives of these types. But cedar in the Old World is very different than this red cedar. It's got long needles. You may have seen them in, it's planted horticulturally around, at least Western Washington, the cedrus from the Old World, like Cedars of Lebanon or Deodar cedar. And Deodar cedar has aromatic wood, very much like the wood of this plant. So when people came here, they gave it the same name. But it's not really a cedar. It doesn't, the leaves and the cones and the life cycle are totally different than what we call cedar. So that way, for that reason, it's most appropriately written either as one word or with a hyphen, just to indicate that it's not a cedar. Now there's no, you can't be dogmatic about that because common names are common names and there's no real right or wrong. But I like to use that as a convention to show it's not a true cedar.
So, but would they use this, a Western Red Cedar, to make like the cedar chests and things that prevent moths from eating your clothes and stuff?
It doesn't, they do, but it doesn't really have the same effect as the red cedar from eastern United States, which is really a juniper. See, the names get
no wonder.
You know, like here's cedar from the Old World, cedrus, like the Cedars of Lebanon, and this is the pine family. Just to tell you the family, to show you that our cedar, red cedar, which is Thuya, is in the cypress family. And the that aromatic red cedar from the eastern parts of the country is actually a juniper, but we call it that's called cedar commonly. I'll put it in quotes just to.
If you see it in the lumber yard, it's often called Tennessee aromatic cedar.
Tennessee.
But to us, the botanist, it's a juniper, juniperus. And this is the cedar up here. I'll call it true cedar. So, you know, a rose by any name is just as sweet, but that's kind of how the classification works. And this juniper is also a cypress family. We have junipers in Washington. We don't have the eastern one, but we have actually three species of juniper in Washington. One is a little shrub that grows around here on the high ridges of places, And the other two are trees. There's only one stand of, I think it's Rocky Mountain juniper that grows along Lake Chelan. It's just a little remnant patch. And then southern Washington, there's a juniper dunes wilderness. There's a few places where there's Rocky Mountain. That was western juniper, and then there's, in coastal areas, there's a few little patches of Rocky Mountain juniper.
The low-level juniper, a lot of times they call them juniper tams. What's the tams mean?
Oh, you know, I've never heard that term, juniper tams. Huh. Does anybody know? I've actually never heard that. But it's a shrub. T-A-M.
Yeah.
Well, that's a new one. Thanks for that.
Do we have cypresses here?
No, we don't have any. We have members of that family, but we don't have any of the genus cypress. Yeah.
What goes in gin?
So, juniper berries and lemon.
Tom Collins. Why? Tom Collins soda?
No. Yeah, lime and tonic, I know. Yeah, but something is used to flavor gin.
It's the berries from juniper. Okay. Juniper berries.
I was going to say crushed pine needles.
Any juniper berry, right? Any juniper berries?
No, slow berries are something different.
Yeah, you are getting out of my area. But I do know they're juniper berries, and they all have those blue, very pungent tasting berries. And in England, where of course real gin comes from, I don't know what they have for species of juniperus, but it would be that genus.
So, is there any others besides cedar and fir that it's like a fir, but it's not a fir?
Yeah, well, this one's a fir. Well, since we're on the topic, I'll mention go to this one. When, you know, Europeans came to this country and they found spruces and they found pines and they found firs, they also found what we call Douglas fir. And they really didn't know what to call it because it wasn't a genus that they had in the old world. And so sometimes called fir, called red fir, common name red fir, because the wood is red, and the wood of most firs is white. But red fir also means another species of aves down that's south of here. They called it Oregon pine. It's nothing like a pine, but the wood is, I guess, like a pine. They called it Douglas spruce sometimes, because it's a little spruce-like, the way the cones are kind of spruce-like, but they're not, the needles are nothing like a spruce. And so eventually they found some trees in Asia, in China, that were a close relative, and they decided to put it all in this genus Pseudosuga. And Pseudosuga really means false hemlock. So I always object to calling something a false anything, but that's what it's called.
It's being named by
what it's not, yeah, that's right. It's not a lot of things. It's not a pine.
I was going to say, that's a very long name.
So instead of Douglas hemlock, it's natural, it's just called Douglas fir.
Douglas fir, yeah. And actually, if it's up to me, I'd probably call it, it's more spruce-like than anything else, I think. The cones are more spruce-like. You know, fir, the genus Aves, true fir, the cones are fleshy and they sit up on top of a branch. The true fir, like up at the top of a branch, there would be this fleshy kind of cone. And growing along the top of a branch. And after it matures, it usually falls apart on the tree. So what's left is the branch. And just this little, the central stalk is left. And all the scales have fallen off and the seeds have been distributed. They call that a candle sometimes. And that's unique, as far as I know, to this genus Aves. For the trees we have. And all the other species have cones either that hang down, like the spruce and the Douglas fir, or they're tightly attached to the stem, like a pine. Pine cones are usually attached, and then may or may not fall off. Except, well, western white pine has cones that hang and fall, and also fall off the tree. So. But anyway, that took us to western red cedar. So we've already identified two. Should we do another? So you can accumulate the
Now, this one is, can be a little pitchy, so if you're fastidious about that type of thing, be careful. And this is the one without my glasses. I'm not sure that there aren't contaminants in here. Looks like
contaminants.
Pitchy.
Yeah. So much toxic waste.
You probably take one or two pieces out of here.
Okay. You already know something about it.
That was three.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, you've already had this. You've got your hands in the snap. Well, here we have long needles.
Now, just make sure before we start, if I do see there is a little bit of spruce in here, which this isn't. So make sure that what you have has needles in bundles.
Yes, it does.
And see how many there are per bundle.
Three.
If you found three, keep looking and see if you find any with more than three.
Five.
There should be five. This points out something to pay attention to, that the key will ask the obvious question is going to be how many needles per bundle. And you may find one or two bundles that only have three or four because a needle has been lost. Or it could just be an atypical bundle. So you have to look around and make sure you get the usual condition. I think it's a good point to say, probably the biggest word in biology, well, there's several. There's this one, usually, and this one, which means often, and there's another one like that. Usually, often, sometimes, usually,
commonly.
I guess usually is the one to pay attention to. There's always the exception, so you want to. When you see that word in a description, I don't think it comes up too much in the conifers, but when you get into flowering plants, that word usually means a lot. So let's go to question one. Now this is getting to be real familiar territory. Leaves needle-like or scale-like, 1A, or leaves not? Well, these are needle-like because you can get, probably. So that takes us to 2. Leaves needle-like or leaves scaly? Definitely needle-like takes us to 3. Needles evergreen, relatively hard or tough. Needles deciduous. Well, we've seen the deciduous one. And you can look at the pictures, not that. So that takes us to 5. 5, needles attached in bundles. Or not, and that takes us to 6. And here's where you just have to have simple mathematics. Needles 2 to a bundle, or needles more than 2, these are more than 2, says, see step 7. No, oh, mostly, that's another one of these little ones. Needles mostly in bundles of 3, 5 to 8 inches long. Well, you may not have a ruler handy, but 5 inches is about like that. And so these aren't that long. So then it says needles mostly in bundles of 5, which is what we have. See step 8. Now there's 2 choices here, and they're nearly all relative characteristics. So we may have difficulty because we only have one example. So it says needles 1.5 to 3 inches long, or needles 2 to 4 inches long. See, there's overlap there. Then it says yellowish green, stout and rigid, or bluish green and slender.
Yellowish green and slender.
See, that's what we often encounter with these. It's like it starts splitting.
If you look through the lens, it does look bluish. At least mine does.
Cones about, see, we don't have cones. Then if we read the rest of the description for 8A, it says, trees of high elevations, especially near timberline. Well, this was found at the elevation of the village. Or it says, usually large forest trees for step 8B. So this is one to puzzle over because it is mostly referring to relative traits. So what I did, I brought this plant down to show you the other choice. These are both five-needle pines. So that trait, you know, number of needles per bundle, that's the kind of trait you can put your foot on, but bluish or yellowish, which one looks more blue? This one definitely does. Which looks stiffer and which looks softer? Well, this looks more soft. This one looks stiffer, but if you only have one,
yeah.
That one looks pretty stiff, yeah. But I'm sure that it's off of the same space.
But it's kind of a bluish here, you know.
Yeah, the newer growth is more blue.
How is it? Right? It looked more blue through the hand lens.
When in doubt, the best, in any kind of plant identification, the best trait to look at, if you can find it, are the reproductive structures. Either the flowers, if they have flowers, or cones, or fruits, if they have fruits. So these are the cones from this tree.
Oh, okay.
If you're walking through the woods, the way I usually see this tree is I see the cones on the ground. And then you look up. Because usually, this is western white pine. Usually it's just in low incidence in the forest. It's not a real common tree, but it's very widely distributed. From sea level up to 4,000 feet or more. Right in this valley, actually, there's more western white pine than I can think of ever having seen anywhere. There's a lot of it in the valley from here down. But usually it's just a here and there individual tree, and usually they're big. You know, of course, when they don't start out big, but they form these really big columnar trunks, very high quality wood, and these cones will be on the ground underneath. Now, this one, the white bark pine, is a tree line species, usually very shrubby almost. It's a tree, but it's a small, often multiple stem tree. And the cones are about the size of a little smaller than a fist, but they're round and squat, and they fall apart usually on the tree. They're really prized by the Clark's nutcrackers in particular, which are common in the high country here. And so looking at the cones, there's no similarity. But just looking at the needles, you really do have to get a sense for what's stiff looking or what's bluish green or yellowish green.
And so that they're saying is the yellowish green and this is the bluish green.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but they're really relative traits. I struggle with this one. If I see one in a habitat that's not obviously one or the other, sometimes I have to look at it for a minute and think, well, does that look stiff? And if you look at them, even with a cluster of needles, you could tell them apart, usually. There's that word again. And, you know, and this one is usually much softer and thinner needles. So those are probably the two that are the hardest to tell just from the leaves.
Looking at the trees from a distance, do they grow differently?
Oh, yeah, from a distance. This western white pine is a big columnar forest tree. If you go over, you know, the fireplace, the outdoor, a campfire ring over there behind Narnia. There's like 10 of them right around there, just big white pines, really big, finely checked bark. If you get a chance to go on the walk this afternoon, I'll point it out. If you don't, if you just go down in the woods and look at these very smooth column, those are western white pine. But they get affected with, it's a disease, and I think it's a pine bark beetle, which hits them if they get in dense concentration. So the tree does okay scattered around, but if it gets to be a dense forest of that one species, it tends to get the disease. So it keeps it from getting too concentrated. All right, now you want to try a hard one?
Okay.
That's cool.
Okay, we got just a few minutes left. Let's try it.
So this time you get the best.
Yeah, okay. You're such an advanced class.
Well,
we'll try a hard one.
We're there.
And this one, I will need to maybe just break some pieces off and pass it around your immediate area there. This one, you do have to look at with the hand lens. We have a little leeway here because if you're late, if we get out of here a bit late, you're only going to miss the lunch. So it's not another class coming in our room, so we'll remember that. Now, I'll give you one warning about this particular group. We're going to look, do we have some to look at? Got one more? Yeah.
Can we have different types?
I think it's the same thing.
Isn't it just a part?
Yeah, it may look.
That's different, isn't it?
One, I'll tell you, some of this was gathered from branches near the ground, and some was gathered from the tip of a tree that had fallen over. And we're gonna look at the leaf tip. Remember the Pacific U had this very diagnostic leaf tip? Well, we're gonna look at a leaf tip that usually looks kind of like this. Usually has a little a tip like that. You know, we have all kinds of leaf tips. And we can even identify species by the leaf tip.
You see it. Is that how they do fossils sometimes?
Yeah, sure. Features like that. Yeah, you have to, and sometimes there's microscopic characters that.
There's something also characteristic about this one, and if there's no stalk at all, the leaf is connected right to the tree.
Right, connected right to the tree.
And I don't remember where that takes us.
Right, well that's going to be something we're going to look at. But what I want to point out is that this is the trait where I'm expecting to see in what you're looking at. But at the very growing tips of a tall tree, you have juvenile leaves, which often look just like this. And so in the key and in my own instructions, I always tell people look for this notch. But you could get a leaf on the top of a tree that's pointed. So if that is one area where you can, and I, if you saw at this point, I would think that's a spruce, which isn't what we're looking at. So let's try real quickly going through the key again. And question number one, we know it's needle-like, goes to two. We know it's needle-like and not scale-like, goes to three. We know it's evergreen and not deciduous, which goes to five. Needles attached in bundles, 5A, no. Needles attached singly, see step 10. So we start out at 10. Twigs of the current year remain green, and it's referring to you, which we've already looked at. That takes us to 10B, which takes us to 11. Cones, here we are at 11A. Cones 2 to 4 inches long with 3-pronged bracts sticking out from between the scales. We don't have that. Buds sharp pointed, we don't have that. Needles pointed, but not prickly to the touch. Okay, 11B, cones without, we don't have that. Buds without, we don't have that. Needles often either blunt or prickly. It's kind of a logic exercise, but it is, these are blunt. So see step 12. Young branches smooth after the needles have fallen. Needles fall off at the base, leaving round scars.
Yes.
That looks like that.
And what we have in this particular genus is that the leaf comes down to a narrow base. And then it forms kind of a little round, I think of it as a suction cup on a twig. And so when that leaf falls off, you see a little round scar. The alternative, which is not what we see here, but what we see in some other genera, is the leaf comes down to its narrow stalk, and that's the end of it.
And then there's a stalk that's part of the twig.
Isn't that like a spruce?
Right, exactly. Now this is what's on spruce and hemlock and Douglas fir. To varying degrees. Sometimes it's really pronounced, sometimes it doesn't really show very much, but it lacks this green suction cup. Are you able to see this in this specimen? So it's one of those diagnostic traits. You have to have a lens to see it, or really good eyes. But if you see that, you can trust that as being an indication of this genus Aedes, or the true bird. So that is 12A. It's referring to 12A, which goes to step 16. And then step 16, this is where you also need the hand lines. It's going to ask you if there are these white lines of stomata on both the top and the bottom of the leaf, or only on the bottom. So
we've got the bottom.
Question 16A says, in the first part it talks about the needles flat, many of all of them spreading horizontally from opposite sides of the twig, which is what this does. Looks very flat, which what you have doesn't. But what's more important, branches flattened. See, how flat they are varies depending on where they're growing. But it says white bands underneath, deep glossy green above. See this one, deep glossy green above, white underneath. It's not very flat.
Yeah.
But what you have, 16B, it says needles with whitish bands on both surfaces. So providing you can see those, which you can't always, but usually you can, that's 18. Now here's where 18, you need to read the whole description again too, because it says needles stiff and turning upward. I find this part a little harder, because some of these twigs you have look like that, don't they? It says needles stiff and turning upward, leaving the lower side of the twig bare. Needles with two whitish bands on the upper side, as well as two bands beneath. Now, are the two bands on the upper side or only one?
One white band.
Okay.
One
band. Then it talks about the bark, and then it also says, growing middle elevations in or west of the Cascades from Stevens Pass southward. Well, we're north of Stevens Pass. So this is a case where geographically we could eliminate this choice. But better are the stomata are found in a single band on the top. So then it says, twigs imperfectly brush-like, needles with one broad whitish band on the upper side, which is what we have. Bark not flaking off, we can't see the bark. Abundant high elevations in the Pacific Northwest, forming timberline. Subalpine fir, and that's what you have. So that's the true fir genus Aedes, and we have, as I said, there's three in the valley. The one you have in your hand is the most common one, subalpine fir. If you walk around in the woods down here, there's a few silver fir seedlings that I've noticed. There may be some big trees, but I've only noticed a few. And then if you go down in elevation, like on the way to Donkey Lake, or probably in the Railroad Creek Valley in the lower part, there's grand fir, which is what this is. Okay? Well, we're out of time. I hear rumbling and lunch is on the way. So thanks a lot for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to have a walk this afternoon at 2:30 to look at conifers.